This is Coast to Coast. I'm Carol Masser. We are here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance and the most interesting stories in global technology from Silicon Valley and beyond, powered by our more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. You can download Coast to Coast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com. You can also listen to our radio show weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern only on Bloomberg Radio.
Who could all the distance?
So 1 month ago, she told Bloomberg to expect one more rate hike than markets have priced in. Let's see if anything has changed in her outlook. Joining us right now, Afsane Beschloss. She is founder and CEO of the global investment and advisory firm Rock Creek Group. They've got roughly $13 billion in assets under management, and she's participating in a panel later today, building a long-term portfolio. She joins us here at the Bloomberg Invest New York Summit. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you here. We're going to talk long-term in a moment, but talk to us about the rate outlook. We've got a Fed meeting next week. Has anything changed in terms of your expectations?
My expectation is still on track that we will get a Fed rate increase next week. Again, another one at least, or two this year.
Really?
And and I think the expectation is that, especially getting into next year, with potential inflation going up, that we could have more than a 25 basis rate increase next year.
So maybe a half point?
Potential.
Wow. What is it in the... Is the inflation data that we're currently getting from the government not accurate enough?
When we look at inflation numbers, they really have not adjusted for a lot of things that have changed our lives, especially in technology, as you know.
Right.
And there are a lot of people, a lot of economists who are studying how to better measure inflation. And obviously, the Fed looks at it in many, many different ways and cuts it up in different ways. It certainly is not picking up, for example, what we're seeing today, which is transport is having major issues getting goods from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that last mile is becoming more and more expensive. If you look across sectors, both the very high tech, where if you're trying to hire a CTO or an engineer, or you're
good
trying
luck.
To exactly, or you're trying to hire someone with less skill. It's becoming more difficult. Construction wages are going up, and people are having difficulty finding labor.
So wage data also not, you think, accurately reflecting what's going on?
I think so. And yeah. I think one other thing that's happening, as you know, is that people are starting to get paid not in their salaries and wages, but bonuses, special payments. So that does not get picked up either.
One-time things,
exactly,
essentially, right?
Exactly. So I think we will be seeing very different numbers moving into next year again.
So that's interesting. You're going to be part of a panel about building a long-term portfolio. So based on what you're saying,
yes,
and higher inflation expectations, where should investors kind of be allocating assets at this point?
You just talked a little earlier about what's going on with the markets today. Obviously, a lot of people still expect to buy on dips in U.S. markets. My thinking, and at Rock Creek, our thinking is that that may not be the best idea, moving especially towards later this year.
Because?
If you look, really, a lot of the polls are already showing that people are getting very, very nervous about this kind of markets. A lot of our team, who are very good investors, and also outside investors that we talk to, are starting to take money off the table. And they're not bearish yet, but
yeah,
I would say people who I respect are becoming much more neutral.
We're talking with Afsane Beschloss, founder and CEO of Rock Creek Group. So if they're taking money off the table, Afsane, are they putting it into cash? Are they finding different types of investments? What are they doing?
So
I'm curious what the tone is.
So we and others are building up cash to look at opportunities.
Yeah.
There are also some really interesting opportunities in private lending. Banks are still not up to where they were prior to 2008. And especially the kind of private lending that is not highly leveraged. There is a lot of interesting opportunities in the U.S., but not increasingly in Europe. Also, what we've seen in the recent past is where money has been flowing into is ETFs, leaving a lot of stocks behind.
A ton of money.
Exactly.
Well, do you agree with that move? So much move into the passive investment world. We saw it. But, you know, over the last couple of years, why wouldn't you just buy the market?
Oh, absolutely. And I think how do you get returns? First, by getting positive returns in the market. Secondly, by reducing your costs.
Correct.
However, moving forward, I think while the indices are really in really good place to invest, you also have to find really good stock pickers and have certain sort of very broad macro views of the market.
It's interesting how you said before that, you know, investors, you're finding more people moving into cash. You guys are moving more into cash. Is it because fundamentally things don't look good? I mean, we look at the statistics on a daily basis. Things aren't coming undone. But I'm just curious if fundamentally you're starting to see kind of some cracks, especially when you look at like the U.S. market.
I think we're not seeing cracks like the traditional way of looking at cracks, like we're going to get into a major bear market.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing dislocations. So if inflation takes off faster than what the market expects, if interest rates go up faster than what the market expects, those create dislocations in certain markets.
Right.
People who are getting very leveraged, we're seeing numbers on borrowings. And in some areas, those are getting quite crazy. So again, there will be dislocations, and where we see opportunity is where we're going to move capital.
Does it bother you, though, that this market has gone on for so long? Does that time alone something that you find, you know, bothering a little bit?
Not really, because we had the most incredible historic event in 2008 and post-2008 with what the Fed did in this country and what the other central bankers did all over the globe. And the amount of liquidity that came into the markets was historical.
And for so long,
so no
right?
question that getting out of that is going to take longer than people expected. So while none of us expected what in months or days or years, I think I'm not surprised.
Financial crisis, another one? Is it just part of our market cycles?
I think it will happen. I'm not too worried about a crisis this year or next year.
In the U.S. or elsewhere?
The U.S. or elsewhere, except in some emerging markets that have huge dollar-based loans. And you've seen a little bit of that in Argentina and Turkey recently.
Right, getting much more difficult in terms of managing their sovereign debt. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good luck on the panel.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you here. Afsaneh Beshloss. She is founder and chief executive officer at Rock Creek Group on site at Bloomberg Invest New York Summit. You are listening to Bloomberg Markets. I'm Carol Master from Bloomberg World Headquarters. Quick check on the markets for you, everybody. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 24,799, down about 14 points. The S&P, we're looking at a gain of about 2. And the NASDAQ, a gain of 24 points. The NASDAQ right now at 7,630. Coming up on the other side of the break, we'll take a look at the midterm elections. Coming up, of course, in the fall, but we've got some primaries underway. An update on that in just a moment on Bloomberg. Guess all I need is some action. So anybody, if you Google and you take a look at index versus passive investment, total assets and index-based passive strategies in mutual funds and exchange-traded funds, well, they have swelled to about $6.8 trillion from $2.7 trillion 5 years ago. This is from some Morningstar data. So let's talk a little bit about passive versus active. The debate certainly continuing, and it is the subject of a panel discussion here at the Bloomberg Invest New York Summit. Participating in that panel, Jean Raby, he is CEO of the Paris and Boston-based Natixis Investment Managers. He's joining us on site at Bloomberg headquarters. Did I get it right?
You did. Thank you very much.
I'm so happy. So passive versus active. I mean, having a passive strategy over the last couple of years has been an easy bet to have because of the easy money that's out of there, out in the marketplace. Is it changing? Are you seeing signs that it's changing?
Well, I've seen change in the narrative. When I joined Natixis Investment Managers last year, the talk was how far would passive go? Active management was dead. This was a lost debate. This year, I see a completely different narrative. As you said, it's been a great run, 35-year bond bull market, 10-year equity market, bull market. Now, assets are a bit more decorrelated. There's more volatility. Valuations are elevated. There's never been a better time to be an active manager, discriminatory, and doing the in-depth analysis to find the right investment opportunity.
So you think, what, 2-3 years from now, when we'll look back historically at the numbers, it'll show that, what, active outperforming passive? Because you're saying it's a narrative now, right?
It's
but we've got to wait to see the numbers.
It's the narrative, but, you know, and then everybody has their own benchmarks. If you take statistics nowadays, the first quarter has been a great quarter for active managers. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that active cannot perform in a bull market. Active does perform. Our debate as Natixis investment managers is less about active versus passive and more about what we believe is our proposition, properly priced active asset management that generates performance over the long term, and what we call mispriced active, which is significant fees on a relative basis,
right,
but then benchmark against strategies,
right,
which is basically delivering what the market delivers at a significantly higher cost than an ETF.
Why would you do that? It's just stupid.
Yeah, but a lot of people are doing that right now. Regulators are starting to call it. Financial Times yesterday had another feature on it. So the public narrative is changing because I think also the debate is getting more nuanced. I mean, we have let us active managers, we have let the public debate be about fees. It's visible, it's simple, it can be understood by anybody.
But that's good?
No, because the real debate is about value.
Okay.
What is the value to investors after fees?
Right.
It sounds simple, but the public debate has not been about
Doesn't
that.
Doesn't it have to be a little bit of both?
Probably.
Right?
Probably.
Because you have had managers, some managers for years, who weren't necessarily performing, but there were a lot of fees tacked on.
Correct.
And that's not great. That's not good.
No.
That's not fair.
And that's
not always transparent.
And I was going to make two points. One, yes.
You've got to be fast. You're fast and I'm fast.
You address that by transparency.
Right.
And we are a proponent of transparency. A lot of my peers are fighting the regulatory environment. We're welcoming it. And secondly, what I think is what it means. Amir, I've lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry.
Oh, you're agitating me too much.
You sound like my husband. It is interesting, though, when you look at this market environment. Take a step back. It'll come back. But when you look at this market environment, how do you see it? How does it feel? You've seen other market cycles.
Well, we're a bit, let's face it, we're in a bit.
Is it long in the tooth?
It's been long in the tooth in the U.S., less so in Europe. I have to take a global view. You know, we have operations around the world. We're an active asset manager around the world,
right,
which differentiates us from many people.
Right.
Europe is a bit different. Earlier in the cycle, in continuing very accommodating monetary policy.
Still
for, again, another 12 to 18 months, if we take the ECB to its word.
Right.
And I think here the discourse will be how quickly will the ECB raise rates while you have still some governments in Europe which have not put their fiscal house in order. And at the same time, you have a U.S. strategy which has gone from monetary policy to now fiscal policy.
Correct.
Prolongating a cycle.
Right.
So I think you're going to see more and more decoupling of the environment, hence the value of being discriminatory and being an active asset manager.
So this is... See, you tied it all around.
It's my job.
But you do think this is the era of, okay, folks, we're getting back to normal. We're seeing more normal volatility. And so active managers who can really understand their investments, they're going to start to outperform. We're starting to see it already. Just got about 30 seconds.
We're going to recognize more their outperformance. They have on our side, they've always outperformed. They've always delivered performance, not only vis-a-vis the benchmark, but vis-a-vis what they promised they would deliver.
Good stuff. I'd go longer, but I gotta wrap it. And I'm kind of exhausted.
I'll be back.
A pleasure.
I shall return, one famous general said.
Enjoy the panel that you're going to do a little bit later on. They're going to be talking about the future of active management. Thank you so much, Jean.
Thank you very much.
Jean Raby, he is the Chief Executive Officer of Natixis Investment Managers, joining us right here on Bloomberg Market.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Yeah, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's going to drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
It is time for the drive to the close. Heidi Ridley is with us, CEO of Rosenberg Equities at AXA Investment Managers, based in California, on site with us here at the Bloomberg Invest New York Summit. Nice to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you.
And I know you participated in a panel earlier here at the summit, and it was called Finding the Edge, Technology for Investors. More and more, when we take a look at the financial community, we're also talking about technology. What do you think are the biggest trends that will make a big difference in the financial world in years to come that are going to be lasting? Because there's a lot of stuff floating out there right now.
There definitely is. There's a lot of pressure to onboard technology, you know, coming from things like pressure on fees that require you to be more efficient and scalable, to making it more and more difficult to outperform in terms of active management. So new insights, new ideas. And really a limitless set of data now and new technology. And so everyone's jumping on the bandwagon. And it is difficult to figure out, you know, separating the wheat from the chaff in terms of what's really, really going to be important drivers. But I think what's here to stay is definitely technology and different techniques that we can now use to apply to new data sets in different ways. And I can talk about that three decades ago.
Machine learning, algorithms. Sorry.
Yes. When Rosenberg started in this business over three decades ago, we were doing the early part of machine learning, if you will, in quotes, which was regression, basically doing simple regression work.
Right.
But now it's become a lot more sophisticated, and machine learning are really just computers that you don't have to program. They learn on their own. And again, there's incredible opportunities that come from those new techniques and new data sets that they're applied to, but there are risks associated to them as well. And so you need to tread cautiously.
New opportunities doesn't always mean better, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
How do you figure out?
You have to have experience. Doing it right, doing it wrong. You know, one of the beauties of quant investing is that it iterates on itself and it never forgets.
Mm-hmm.
So having a systematic process that you can codify your ideas and make them repeatable and not as, you know, susceptible to human bias as more traditional methods, I think is a massive advantage. But it's not easy to just jump into it. If you're used to making your decision in different ways,
right,
trying to have it be very data-driven and scientific is not as easy to sell to an organization, and so there's both sides of it.
When you look at technology and what it's doing in the financial community, is it more about going to make a difference when it comes to institutional investors and institutional investing versus the retail masses? And I know we have robo-advisors and so on and so forth, but about kind of getting the investment community to more people, where is it going to make the biggest difference?
In terms of broader applicability, it really would come mostly in the cost saving sides of it, and being able to pass that through, by the way, to shareholders.
Right.
And so if you can do things more efficiently in a more scalable way, you can pass on that cost efficiency to investors and give them active management at lower fees.
Sorry, it's catching.
So
that's been a long day.
That's where I think it's broadly applicable.
Right.
Where some aspects are going with the more individual investor is marketing strategies,
yeah,
as, you know, being artificial intelligence driven and things like that. And so really kind of emphasizing some of the tools that you're using. At the end of the day, the underlying product's the same. So that's where it maybe be a bit more cautious. On the institutional side, it allows us to really customize solutions for our clients in a way that is systematic and repeatable.
So in other words, whatever they want specifically.
Exactly. And that's where the world is going. I want an outcome, not a product.
That's interesting. So how do you shape different outcomes? I guess it's more risk, less risk.
There are a number of different ways you can do it. In the early days for us, it started out with, I want the benchmark X this country or X these particular stocks. And that's, you know, relatively easy to do. Today, it could be the genesis of, for example, our sustainable equity strategy is, I want market-like returns with about 80% of market volatility. I want, you know, less, I want more downside protection, and I want to get market-like returns. So you can optimize that function and create a strategy that delivers
that. I love that you brought it up, because I feel like ESG investing, you've really seen it evolve as the use of data has made it kind of a smarter strategy and giving people the ability to kind of customize it. It's not just ruling out, but ruling in.
Right. Absolutely.
And you could do it that way.
Yeah, we, as a quant investor, we're early, relatively speaking, adopters of ESG information into our investment process, and we now have it incorporated across our strategies. But the important aspect is that we're after the economic link or the you know, basically the investment information that is in those ideas. Beyond that, those are really client-driven views, because even if you believe in ESG, there can be a wide range of perspectives around
Correct.
What matters.
Right, exactly. I'm curious, too, as, you know, I said to you before we got going, it's hard for me to kind of sometimes get my head around that we're 10 years from the financial crisis,
right.
But we've been talking to you about active versus passive investing and how the environment is kind of getting back to normal with more volatility, and Europe's going to be maybe a little bit different from what we're seeing here in the United States. Are your clients, customers, kind of demanding more out of the algorithms or so on and so forth, expecting now it to be a different market?
It's hard to say. It's sort of, in some seconds, feels like it's going to keep going. I mean, it certainly
yeah.
seems like the view
feels
is that,
that
it'll keep going. You know, our view is that, you know, these things mean revert. It's just a matter of time. And so being very thoughtful about how you create solutions for clients is going to be really important.
All right. Great to get some time with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Heidi Ridley. She's Chief Executive Officer at Rosenberg Equities at AXA Investment Managers, based in California, on site at the Bloomberg Invest New York Summit. You are listening to Bloomberg Markets on this Tuesday. I'm Carol Masser. We've got the closing bell in just a moment.
Except that life keeps running in cycles.
Jonathan Levine is co-managing partner at Bain Capital. They've got approximately $85 billion in assets under management. He's also chief investment officer of Bain Capital Credit, based in Boston, on-site here at Bloomberg Invest New York Summit at Bloomberg World Headquarters. Nice to have you here with us.
Glad to be here.
You spoke earlier with our Scarlett Fu, and you guys were talking about learning from the cycles, market cycles, of course. Talk to me about the current market cycle. Does it make sense to you, where we've come? Where we've come and where we are?
I think, and for the most part, it does. Earnings are good. There's been an enormous amount of quantitative easing, which has done what it's supposed to do. It, you know, softened what could have been a very, very bad landing in the U.S. and Europe. It's given companies time to recover and to grow. I think one thing that does not make a lot of sense to me is I'm not exactly sure what constitutes bad news anymore.
You and me both.
I think the market is so used to just going up. It goes up because it's going up. And I do wonder, when there is actual bad earnings news, how the markets will incorporate that. I think it'll be a little bit like, you know, the party was going great, but you had a sense that you're overstaying your curfew. And so when somebody catches you, you're gonna panic.
But that's an interesting point, because the fundamentals, earnings have been good, right? So maybe it does still justify the movement up, if you just take even the equity class, right, that we've seen, because the fundamentals are still good.
They absolutely are. But remember, when you're buying a stock or making a loan, you're making an implicit judgment about the present value of future earnings. And you are incorporating into that the risk of the risks to those earnings. And right now, the forward earnings look good. But, you know, a week ago, people wouldn't have thought there was tariff risk,
right.
For example.
Right. And we know earnings can change.
Right.
We've seen it before.
Right. And what also happens, particularly in the credit space, is when things go well, the consensus in the group think tanks seems to be everything is going well, and that's when excess creeps into the system. And I tell the old parable of the frog that gets boiled. You know, you just turn it up 1 degree at a time, and then you don't notice you're getting boiled. So that's what we've all got to look out for. It's not about what's happening now; it's what could happen a year from now.
Are you seeing excesses being?
We are certainly seeing people trying it in credit documents. I think in general, it's fine to okay. It's certainly not great.
Right.
And that's why we have a very, very large credit team that is looking out for the noise that's starting to creep when it creeps into the system, about if earnings misses start to creep up, if people are barely passing their covenants. You know, there's a difference between passing your covenants and passing your covenants with flying colors. And then there's just certain kinds of news that might start to scare, that should scare the market, that doesn't. And we're on the lookout for that.
So you wake up in the morning. What's the most important aspect of the financial markets? Like, what do you want to know, first of all? Do you check, is it the president's tweets? Are you looking at Italy? No, I'm curious, though. Like, yeah. What's important to you? What's the pecking order?
Right. So Sadly, well, I do check the president's tweets every morning.
See, and, I wasn't so crazy.
And and more importantly, I do the run of all the morning shows, business and political shows, to see the reaction to them.
Because the market does react.
The market does react, and the market does care. And I think that there was some debate about the jobs and the jobs numbers, and you know, obviously the tariff tweets. He sort of signaled that, but more importantly, what I try to do, and the team I work with, we try to make sure that we're constantly painting a mosaic about what's going on in the world. There's no one piece of information that's going to change what I believe or what our firm believes, because we are trying to invest through a cycle. Mm-hmm. We're trying to make investments that work through a cycle. But the mosaic itself will show you a general weakening in the economy, or show you a general, you know, almost instability in the investor base.
Right.
That's really where you could start to see, you know, opportunities to invest and a time to pull back.
Isn't it kind of crazy, though? I feel like we went from very quickly a period where everybody was lauding the synchronized global economies and growth to all of a sudden we're saying, well, maybe not so much anymore.
Well, I have an expression I use a lot, which is it's never as good as it looks.
You're telling us we've got about a minute left.
It's never as good as it looks or as bad as it feels.
That's how it is in broadcast,
so,
too.
I think that it is not.
This is good, though.
It is not unusual to think that it doesn't stay perfect all the time. And
right.
I think that some of those excesses or some of the, you know, disequilibriums are starting to creep into the markets politically in Europe. I think it'll be interesting if the tariffs hold, what that does, because mm-hmm. it will definitely be run counter to the tax cuts.
That's real.
It is real, but we don't know how real, because we don't know how long those tariffs will stay in place. Maybe it is a negotiating tactic. So more than ever, we have to not try to predict. We have to adapt to the information we get.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really
pleasure to be here.
This. Jonathan Levine, he's a co-managing partner at Bain Capital, joining us on Bloomberg Radio. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks for listening to Coast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com. You can also listen to the radio show weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio.